You are listening to a Science Actually production.
Give us a bottle of your finest champagne, 5 shrimp cocktails, and some bread for my brother.
We have a Dom Perignon 71 at $120.
That'll be fine, pal.
Come on, seriously, you guys. The food here is really expensive. The soup is fucking $10. Come on, let's go outside. I'll buy you a cup of coffee.
We're putting the band back together.
Forget it. No way.
We're on a mission from God.
Oh, get the band back together.
Did I freeze there for a second?
We are all good. We have audio. We have video.
We're good at it.
We're recording. We're doing it live.
We're doing it live!
Woo! Woo! Yeah, back together.
Benjamin, would you like to get us going today?
Yes, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of The Nerd and the Scientist, brought to you by
the
Science
what?
Action. The Nerd and Scientist. No?
Today, Benjamin, today we have for you, our blessed listeners and viewers, a very special episode of the Space Quesera Show with your favorite space nerds, Cobby and Benjamin.
Welcome back.
Where were we? I think it's been 2 years.
It's been nearly 2 years.
Yeah.
It's been a bit. It's been a moment. It's been a minute.
It's been a hot minute.
It's been
anyway,
a hot minute.
Episode 30, Zinc.
Yeah. All right, zinc. Yeah, so my fun fact about zinc for today is, besides being a wonderful form of sunscreen, zinc is actually the main ingredient in U.S. pennies. There's a fascinating history that pennies used to be made of entirely copper. Then they had about 12% nickel. So if you find yourself, Sarah, picking up a penny and having an allergic reaction, that's because it's a penny from the 1800s, if I recall correctly. You have a little nickel allergy.
I do, yes. Wow, sharp memory.
Some stuff stays in, the rest of it goes out. But yeah, most, like something like 97% of a penny that you see today in circulation, if it's from after the 1980s, will be 97%. Zinc, just copper plated on the outside, so do not eat them. There was somebody I saw online who ate over 400 pennies and did not live to tell the tale. Yeah.
Why?
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Well, there goes my weekend.
425 pennies. I don't know.
Why? What?
I can't break the 300 penny barrier. It's like a whole day shot.
You know
how much teeth brushing goes into that? Like, so much teeth brushing.
I feel like they almost kind of deserved it. I don't know. Like, so yeah, like, you know what?
Yeah.
450 pennies. That sounds like a good idea. Let's do that.
Let's do that.
The weird thing is like, I found this fact looking up the toxicity of zinc, but the person who did that just, I think they died from a bacterial infection because it's pennies. It's currency. Don't you
know
people
the person who did that?
Watching.
The person who did that, who got 400 something pennies, that wasn't his first, you know, that wasn't his first rodeo. You gotta know, he started with one penny, and then he's like, I'm gonna go for 5 cents. And then he's like, you know what, I bet you I can get half a buck in me. There were some horrible, horrible things happening hours later, you know it. I bet it took him a year to get the four bucks.
Was there like a Guinness World Record track record of pennies consumed, and they were like, "I got to hit 450 because the previous record was 397." You know what I mean? Like, how did this come about?
Was there a guy with a clipboard there from Guinness World Records counting out each one?
Yeah,
he was regulation.
And
I wonder if this guy tried to board a plane.
Guys,
you're detecting something. Oh, I had $4 for lunch.
Yeah, that's a great start. So those are your penny, your zinc facts.
Zinc facts.
And we're back.
And we're back.
And
this episode will be airing, supposedly, next week, Thursday on January 30th. So happy January 30th birthday to Douglas Carl Engelbart, who invented the very first computer mouse out of wood. And then he was brought on as an advisor to invent the joystick. And happy birthday to the first Cuban, Caribbean, and Latin American astronaut, Arnaldo Mendez. And happy birthday to Japan, or JAXA's, actually, for the Japanese Space Agency's first official astronaut, Mamoru Mori, who flew on two shuttle flights, STS-47 and 99. It's like,
happy birthday. I'm also really kind of baffled that the first mouse was made out of wood. I don't know. Plastic was a thing at that time.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. 1970s when he officially patented it. But the guy made the first prototype out of, I guess, what he had. Wood.
You just get so many splinters. Like, you ever find yourself, like, a page freezes when it's loading, so you start clicking aggressively? Just, like, infinite splinters. Would not be a good idea. Would not work.
Well, I'm learning a lot in this episode already. Okay.
That's the point.
For folks who somehow never had the privilege and pleasure of listening to the Space K Sarah show, this is Space K Sarah. Space K Sarah right here coming to you from Rockford, Illinois. This was the original gang. I mean, our original podcast was the three of us, and we would do fun facts about different chemical elements as we worked up to the table, and astronaut and scientist birthdays. So we're just trying to recreate some of that space case magic for you.
That's right.
I appreciate
the Nerd and the Scientist podcast is Sarah's fault.
Well, and for the record, I stepped away from doing the radio thing for a few reasons, but one of them being that I decided to pursue a PhD.
So, what are we pursuing our PhD in?
Well, this is very exciting. I just actually finalized my dissertation, and there's just so much from the last time that we've all been together that has happened, which is very par for the course for my life lately. Just like things just change so fast. And sorry, pushing Hubble out of the way. So my dissertation is, I actually have to still like look at it to read it to remember the title. It's Immersive Visualization in Science Communication, Connecting Ocean and Space Research for Astrobiology with Open Space, which is what I have been doing the last year, which has been basically connecting ocean and space research with a program called Open Space, which is funded by NASA, that puts, basically, they're trying to put all of the known universe and lots of NASA missions and data into this program, and it's utilizing planetariums. And so, yeah, it's just been, yeah, from like the last time the three of us were together till now, it has been an epic, epic journey to say
just been wasting your time doing nothing.
But it was,
I'm just blown away. I mean, like, that dissertation title alone, there is so much there. There's at least three PhDs in that one PhD title.
I was trying to think about this when we were talking about getting back together, and I'm like, when was the last time I talked and did things with them? And it was right before I left for the ship. And that was right also when I found out that I got into my PhD program. So it was sort of like that, like, you know what, I think this is the right time to step away from this and just start focusing on that. And then the ship expedition completely changed everything. And then bumping into open space completely changed everything again. So it's just been, it's been a lot.
I'm gonna ignore the sentence bumping into open space, which I love. Tell the folks about joints. Tell us about Joides.
Bodie McBoatface. Yeah, so for the audience who has absolutely no idea what I'm talking about, which I'm sure most people don't, the Joides Resolution, and I have to unfortunately say was, because it has now been retired, was an ocean core drilling research ship funded by the NSF to basically go all around the world and pull up core samples from different places around the world from the ocean floor. And I got selected for the expedition I went on because we were going to a very special hydrothermal field that is really important for astrobiology research. And not only were we going there to pull up core samples, we were also taking a special new tool that was going to basically take fluid samples down a previously drilled hole to catch like samples at different intervals going down, which has never been done before. So you can get like multiple samples collected down one hole that has been sitting there undisturbed for, I think it was like 15 years. So it was a really exciting mission to be a part of from an astrobiology perspective, because we wanted to see how much life we could find going down that borehole. We know the extreme limits that we can find life to exist in a lab, but we don't really know what that looks like in the wild. So we did this expedition. It was so much fun. I truly, truly want to sail again. I loved being out at sea. But one of the cool and unexpected things that happened while we were on this expedition was that we were in an area where you can access mantle rock easily. And I say that lightly because it's very difficult.
I love that phrase.
Anywhere. But this is a place where the plates of the earth are splitting apart. And so the mantle rock is kind of rising up in that area. And so what we were able to do was capture the most mantle rock ever recovered, ever. A continuous sample. The most that the ship had ever pulled up was 97 meters at about a 30% recovery rate, which meaning out of those 97 meters, 30% of the rock made it back up to the ship. We pulled up 1,268 meters and with almost a 100% recovery rate. Yeah.
1,000 meters of a single sample?
Like a single continuous sample, yeah.
1,268.
How big is the boat? People who are just listening, Benjamin's face is looking slightly confused because that's not converted to units of eagles per freedom.
oh, God.
That's like over a mile of rock.
It's like, 2 miles, of rock. And I mean, it just kept, so most of the geologists on the ship are, normally they're hard rock geologists. And so when you're doing these expeditions, they expect about a core sample to be pulled up every 3 hours. We were pulling up like one every hour. And you could just see it on their faces. They knew it was good, but they also were like, oh, my God, so exhausted. But it all paid off in the end because our work was so significant that we as an entire crew got our first paper published in Science back in August. So that was pretty cool.
It's incredible.
Super cool.
It's, and you know, the best part is my name is dead last on the paper. So when you go to the paper, it's like, you know, it shows the first like 4 or 5 names and then it's goes dot, 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 and you have to click it. But then it goes dot, 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 and Sarah Treadwell. And I'm like,
yes. There you are. I'm in there.
right there.
So, bam, right there at the bottom.
Yeah. So what happened then is I got back, you know, this amazing thing happened. It was so incredible. I mean, even when we were on the ship, the news media coverage was just like constant. And get back, and I'm a part of NASA's Astrobiology Guild, which I always think is so funny because I just think it's like, I don't know, the guild, just kind of the name makes me chuckle. But we were having the meeting, and they brought in a group called Open Space to come and give a presentation. And they were like, yeah, so we have this software, and we have this program that you can do that talks about astrobiology science and blah, blah, blah. And before I could even ask, they were like, but we don't have anything that goes under the water and it doesn't show any vent fields. And that was the area that we were in doing our core drilling. And I was like, aw, that stinks, because that would have been kind of cool to have for my outreach talking about my expedition. And then someone from a NASA grant program pops up in my chat and she's like, hey, you could apply for a grant to work with Open Space to do this and like build that show. And I was like, okay. this is the way my life seems to work now all the time. I'm just like, well, okay. So I wrote this big grant to work with Open Space to put into this planetarium show the Lost City hydrothermal field and also the ship that I sailed on and different vessels that are important. Not knowing the rabbit hole I was about to go down because planetariums are the portable ones. They're very expensive. And it's really, really, really challenging to learn how to fly. That's what they call it when you're controlling how to move around in a show. It's a huge art form and craft. And so anyway, this whole past year has been me learning how to fly, taking domes out to the dome that I have right now, out to different schools. And it's just been completely life-changing, and so life-changing to the point that now it is the basis of my thesis of my dissertation. And that's about as easily as I can sum that all up.
Wow. I got to get myself an inflatable planetarium.
Oh,
I think I would just sleep in it all the time. That's okay, it.
It's so cool. And that's why I wanted to study it for my dissertation, because truly, I always joke with people, but I'm not making it up. With great power comes great responsibility. And the immersiveness of being in a dome is so realistic to your senses that if you move too fast, you can make people sick. Like, you really can. Mm. And there's so much power in that, though, because think of, you can make it a very negative experience. And sure. You can also make it a powerful, positive experience. And I've seen this phenomenon happen over and over where people, they're so blown away that you're like, wow, like there's something special here, because you don't get that with a two-dimensional screen. There's something about that dome experience when you have the music that sounds out right with different things. And like, it's just, it's really amazing. And so as a professional communicator, I'm like, I'm really fascinated by the efficacy of this, because I feel like it's one of the most unique tools to share space science. So that's why I want to study it. But you know, who would have thought? I never would have thought that like sailing on a ship, going to this Lost City hydrothermal field would turn into planetarium shows that would become my PhD dissertation. So, but here we are.
It's amazing. And I think that like, it's such a great example of just like following your passion. And then the way that you describe it, it's like, this is my life now. You know, people just like suggest, hey, why don't you do this? And you do this and it works. And you just like keep succeeding somehow and doing all these awesome things.
Right.
Yeah.
And I love that. I really, yeah. really love it.
I feel like one of the things that gives me an advantage, though, of the dome shows is that I am a musician first. Like, that was my undergrad originally, was music. And so, you know, I come from a creative arts background. And so doing these shows, it's not just regurgitating information. It's creating an experience for people. And that's where I take a lot of pride in, like, trying to get it feeling. So I don't want, you know, I don't want to give away all my secrets, but I start shows. Yes. I start my shows with what in open space they call the Milky Way sphere. So really, you see all these little lights, and it's really actually all galaxies, but people generally don't know that. So they walk in and they're like, oh, look at all the stars, right? And so then I drop them in, and the Milky Way will fall down on you. And I have this soundtrack that just hits just right. It just is so cool. And then when we finish, I pull them all the way back out, back to that starting point. And I tell them like, hey, when you came in here, you thought these were all stars. Every single little point of light is a galaxy. And they're like, you know, just their jaws are on the ground. And I mean, really, and it's like, you know, the looking up through the night sky with a soda straw. It's like the equivalent of that, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. That you're seeing projected in the dome. And so for me, the artistry of it all is like, it's tapping into all those different little parts of my background that I think they all complement each other to get to this point where it's like, yeah, this is what I'm doing. So one of awesome. Many things, but yeah.
Edutainment.
I love it. Edutainment.
It's awesome. Yeah.
Right. And going from like our show, as you said, from our original show and all the wonderful things you're doing. I think at the time there was also like a Messier marathon that you were running or mm-hmm. you were involved
I
in
remember that.
At Yerkes Observatory. There was something that was happening there. And so like, you're doing all these like really cool grassroots level events. And then suddenly you're just like catapulted into the world of like sailing across the sea for this mission, writing science papers, going to the AGU. Like, you're like in the thick of the science while still also like, as you said, like trying to bring your own experience and background in the arts into education, into science communication.
Yeah. And that's, cool. yeah, the thing that I think too that has become larger than myself. You mentioned I live in Rockford, Illinois, and we're for a city our size, we have incredible crime rates. Unfortunately, we're actually considered, I think, for a city the size, the third most violent city to live in the United States, which I know is kind of shocking. And all of our public schools, at least the elementary schools, are now Title I schools. So I last year when I proposed this grant, I was like, oh no, I don't actually know how to run a planetarium show at all. Like, I have no idea. So I was able to secure a portable dome with a partnership. Actually, it was the educational group from Yerkes, who, well, not anymore, but when they were at Yerkes, and now they have their own nonprofit. But anyway, they let me borrow their
glass, right?
Yeah, glass. Yeah. And yeah, because we had Adam on one time. That's right. Yeah.
Adam McCulloch. Yeah.
Yeah. So I started taking it out to the schools, and it just kind of caught on like wildfire, to the point where I still can't even quite keep up with it. It's like, I have a dome show again tomorrow. It's been so impactful to these schools because they can't take their students out to field trips. They can't take them truly even to a local museum in town. It's too difficult to coordinate, and me being able to bring this to them is so impactful. And that has kind of like shifted everything for me. It's meant a lot. So yeah, it's been quite a genesis. I don't even know how to process it all myself.
That's a wonderful thing to be able to provide to schools. Just being a planetarium to school. I mean, it's a phenomenal thing for kids, especially for younger kids.
Yes.
To have that. I mean, some colleges, you wish they had a planetarium. But you know, anything lower than that, there isn't. So to be able to just like, here you go in your little, you know, auditorium, here comes this lady. And she's got a planetarium for you guys to sit in. How many people could fit inside of it at once? Like, as far as little kids go anyway.
It's actually surprisingly big inside. But, like, so the problem I have is, so I deal with a lot of elementary students usually. And it's highly, highly stimulating. So sometimes you have to decide, like, do you space them out and not try to cram too many in because they get a little bit too overstimulated and then they're all on the floor and they're touching each other. It kind of just depends. usually you can fit like a solid 20 people in it at one time. I mean, it's cool. It's a decent size. but yeah, it is. It's really stimulating for these kids. And so it's one of the things that's slightly challenging about doing it is they lose their minds. Like, they literally lose their minds to the point where sometimes I have to stop everything and be like, I can't keep telling you what you're looking at if you don't calm down. Like, they just geek out. And again, with great power comes great responsibility. And sometimes we got to stop the show for a little bit and be like, bring it down, kids. Because I understand this is really neat, but we got to bring it down. But it really, yeah. I mean, I started writing down last year things that I would hear in the dome, because it just like, I don't know, like these kids will be like, wow, I feel so emotional right now. I think I could cry. And I'm like, oh, okay. You know? It's just been an amazing, amazing part of what my work has morphed into. And it's really cool too, to connect that ocean and space research, because I think people are so disconnected between ocean and earth and the world and space. They think it's like, you know, we're here on earth and space is out there. But it really connects that storyline of why, no, like, we need to research the extreme places on Earth to be able to understand how to look for, you know, maybe signs of life out there. So it's very fulfilling in many different ways.
It's awesome.
It's so cool. I think, Benjamin, did you want to pause to do an ad break and then we can continue this incredible discussion?
Sure thing. Ad break. Here we go. Get ready for the most mind-boggling starfield experience you've ever seen. It's the inflatable planetarium within a planetarium within a planetarium. That's right. Why settle for one inflatable dome of cosmic wonder when you can own an entire galaxy of them? Start with our massive outer cosmic web planetarium then step inside to find a smaller galactic planetarium, and then step inside again to an even smaller solar system planetarium. Each one packed with stars, constellations, and astronomy, all scaled down to perfection. It's stars, it's science, it's inflatable, and it's all yours for just $14.99. But wait, there's more. Call now, and you'll get our smallest planetarium yet, barely big enough to stick your head in, for that atomic feel of a planetarium within a planetarium within a planetarium within a planetarium experience. Absolutely free. Don't wait. Own the cosmos today. Call us now at 1-800-STARFLATE. That's 1-800-STARFLATE. Starfleet! Small domes, big fun.
Sign me up.
Yeah!
I mean, that price, yeah.
With that price,
well, I'll take 10. $1,499, but I just said $14.99 because I got excited. Still.
Okay. I really didn't know. Like, I kind of even a little mad when I wrote the grant. Like, I was like, yeah. And I just kind of Googled, like, you know, planetarium projectors. And Amazon will offer you up these star projectors, right? And even, like, really fancy ones. And so I just assumed that that's what it was. So I'm like, yeah, like $3,000 for this, $2,000 for that. No. They're like $50,000, the professional systems. No, not even
holy moly.
Yeah, so I'm like, why didn't somebody tell me?
Does your inflatable planetarium have like a little projector that's separate from it, or is
So the projector is it's like a fisheye lens.
Yeah.
And so the one that I have is from 2006, but I'd say even now you could still probably sell it off for like $15,000. Like that's how expensive these things are. And then the domes themselves are usually around $10,000-ish. So a new system runs you anywhere from $30,000 to $50,000. Which like, it's like a freaking car, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Did not know, had no idea. And then on top of it, sorry, I don't know if you guys want to keep recording, but on top of it, all of the new systems generally are running proprietary software. So you can't run OpenSpace on them because OpenSpace is open source and they don't like that. So they don't let you put OpenSpace on their systems. So like it narrows the pool down even more of how many systems are available for you to purchase and use. Yeah. And I was like, well, this is a conundrum. So I'm so lucky. I mean, bless the sweet projector. We at OpenSpace, they helped us figure out how to like basically find out the specs in the projector to figure out how to put OpenSpace into a mode that could project it as best as possible. But like, it's not great. It could be a lot better. But that, I mean, it's still like, to me, that's so powerful. It's not the best projector. Like you can clearly see each little pixel and you're like, okay, yeah. But it still makes such an impact on people. And you're like, man, imagine what like a modern, you know, bright luminous projector, what that could do.
Absolutely. So,
yeah. Which I might have something in the works. Ooh. I might have like four things in the works, but it's fine.
I think this is the wonderful thing and kind of like the science communicator's dilemma, right? Like as a science communicator, you know a lot of the flaws that you have in your own methods, right? Mm-hmm. So like, you know, I used to do street astronomy, like set up a bunch of telescopes and just show the moon or Saturn or whatever could be seen that night to whoever was passing by. And to me, it was like, oh, you know, it's only the planets, it's only the moon, blah, 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 like these, you know, crappy telescopes. But to the people who had never stopped to look at the moon, it was mind-blowing and it was a moment that they never would have had otherwise. And I think it's the same thing with what you're describing. Like even if, yeah, it's not the, it's only the $15,000 projector, not the $50,000 projector. And there are like, you know, resolution issues that could be improved, sure. But like there are kids who have never experienced the cosmos in any way close to that, who you are changing their lives.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It really, no, and I think of that too. Absolutely. Yeah. It's definitely your own dilemma and your own struggle. The underwater elements, there's definitely some things that like the projector almost gives me an advantage that it doesn't project super great. and things that I'm going to keep developing and working on in the show, because another unique learning curve that I've actually talked to other people about too as well is when you see something in a three-dimensional world, real life, right? Especially when you're under the water and you see something that's a light is shining on it and then it's blackness behind it. It makes sense to your brain, but when you put that in a dimensional model in the dome, it doesn't quite work out. It just kind of looks like there's something floating with blackness behind it. And so we really kind of struggled to figure out the right way to make it feel realistic to the viewers. And so again, this is where the projector gives me an advantage. We, I don't mind admitting this. We found this 360 bubble video, that is basically a shipwreck. It's a sunken ship, but it's this perfect blue green color that blends in with the vents really nicely. And so the projector doesn't, you know, quite distinguish the two super great. So it looks super good for that projector, but I'm like, man, if I ever get a new one, we're going to have to do something different, because it does, because somebody would be like, huh, why is there a wreck, a shipwreck with a vent floating in front of it? But it works right now. So there's some pros to it. But that's the beauty of also working with open space, is that it is open source. And if you're a researcher and you're like, I want my data visualized somehow, like that's the beauty of open space, is that anyone can approach them and be like, hey, I'd love to have my data visualized in your software. And the power of it that I saw, I've seen so many demos now and I'm blown away what they can do. Like, for example, someone did a modeling of the, is it the Kuiper belt that's around Jupiter, right? No.
The Trojan asteroids that are around Jupiter?
Yeah. So like when you usually see planets on an orbital spin, right, you see the planet and then you see like, here's that clump of asteroids and here's that clump of asteroids. But in open space, you can take it and you can flip it on its side and then you can see the variant height differences of where those asteroids are in relation to Jupiter, right? They're not just a nice little level plane. It's like, right? And that's kind of the cool thing of what they can do, is they can offer this visualization of real data in a way that you're not going to normally see in just your kind of general models of, you know, oh, the planets go around like this, right? You get that three-dimensional.
That's so awesome. Yeah. I am going to buy this planetarium.
We're going to start a GoFundMe. The nerd and the scientist buy a planetarium.
Sorry, 50,000 no college people for you.
Give Dad $1. Planetarium.
It's very cool. There's a bit of a learning curve to operate open space, I won't lie, but it's very powerful. And some of the sneak peek things I've seen them be able to do, I'm like, this is just the coolest thing I've ever seen. So I'm definitely an open space loyalist now. I have, not only for myself, but because I've seen what they can do and how creative things can be made. So that's why I'm doing my PhD in it. But yeah, I've been super busy, obviously.
Clearly.
And so when, I know that this is like the forbidden question to ask a grad student, but when can we expect to be calling you Dr. Space Case Sarah?
Great question. So I have to do my comps in a month, which I'm a little bit stressed about because he'll never listen to it, so he won't know, but half of the time I have my comps, I'm going to be in Patagonia. Whoops. It'll be fine. I couldn't say no to going to Patagonia.
No.
I'll be super prepped. Don't worry. But once I get through that, then, there's just so many things I can't talk about. I don't know how next year is going to look. But basically, there are three different options of how I'm going to do my research with open space and dome shows. I'm not sure which way it's going to land yet. So it could be like a year, maybe a year and a half out from now. But there's three very distinct, I'll tell you guys when we're not recording, because two of them are so good.
At the very least, you'll have to come back on once this is, public information and we know and we can hear all about it and share it with all of
right.
our viewers.
We need a part two.
I haven't talked about it yet. But yeah, some really, really cool options. So yeah, three different options. We'll see.
So cool. Amazing. And Patagonia. So Patagonia.
Patagonia.
What Patagonia? Yeah, tell us more about that.
Well, so July, I went to Chile to go to the telescopes that they have, you know, owned by the NSF. So I got to go up to ALMA, up to the high telescopes, which was really amazing. And then the organization AUI that does that also has sort of a little spin-off program to go to Patagonia. And I don't know if this is kind of sad of me to say this, but I'll say it anyway. But like the telescope experience was very cool, but it was very mild in terms of a lot of the things that I do, right? Like I go scuba diving and really like exotic places.
It's no inflatable dome.
Mount Everest base camp treks, right? So for me, going up to the high site was sort of the peak experience because I was like, it was like actually kind of extreme. So the Patagonia one was advertised as like, don't apply to this if you're not like in pretty good shape because it's going to be kind of rugged and it's a really remote location. And I'm like, sold. I'm in. I want to do that. Even though I'm not really an environmental science communicator, I really loved working with that group. And a lot of people in the planetarium space world seem to apply for this program. So anyway, I applied for it and I got selected. And so we're basically, it's just so cool. Like you go to Santiago, and then you take another plane and you go down towards the bottom part of Chile. You board a boat, you sail overnight on the boat to a nature preserve. And then you get to like live at this nature preserve for like 10-ish days and get to go hiking and you get to go out on boats and watch whales because it's humpback whale season down there. And yeah, it's just like,
you know. So cool.
Awesome.
Go back
and awesome.
My comp stuff when I get back to the research facility, it'll be fine.
It's amazing. Like I want to say like I'm jealous of how much you're traveling. Like I've also been fortunate enough to travel quite a bit during my PhD, but like I went to Urbana, Champagne, which was nice, but you're going to freaking Patagonia.
Right?
Patagonia.
I know. I'm really jazzed about Patagonia. It's going to be a really unique experience. And then I have an application out to sail again. So we'll see. I'm not sure if that'll pull through or not, but that's not one of the dome things I can't talk about. That's something that I don't mind sharing. I applied to sail on another ship that's significantly smaller than the Joides Resolution, but they have a really awesome science communicator outreach program. So I don't know. I saw the call and I was like, why not? So
why not?
This is what I do. I just throw it out there.
I go on boats and I talk science.
I think I was having a conversation with someone the other day about job applications and they were like, oh no, I'd never get this. I'm not qualified enough. I'm not going to apply. And I said to them like, just ask, like, just put in an application
out there. Yeah. Just do it. Who cares?
You miss all the shots you don't take.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And what's the worst?
In my case, I miss most of the shots I do take. But like, still.
No. I mean, it that's sort of the mentality I've just had now where I'm just like, I don't know. I'll just throw my shot at it. And now I'm kind of getting to the point where like now I do need to be a little bit more careful because like I don't want to overwhelm myself with too many things. But I mean, yeah, exactly. You miss the shoots you don't shots you don't shoot. So why not? I don't know. To me, it also feels like I just think that
you miss the shoots you don't.
Shoots you don't. Yeah.
There's missing happens. There's missing things get missed. There you go. Yeah, I heard somewhere. But,
yeah, like I don't know. It just I've had also a very transformative year personally. Lost my best friend, lost her husband very unexpectedly, things like that. That like life is really short and it's super precious. And so just live it full because you're not going to get, even if maybe you're not as adventurous as me, like remember that you'll never be this age and this stage of life ever again, right? So you might as well just take advantage of the time that you have and the life that you have right now to whatever fulfillment level it is for you. So, you know, maybe it's not going to Patagonia, but is it taking that trip to another state that you've always wanted to go see that place, right?
Right.
Go do it. Just, you know, because someday you might not be able to. I signed up for this spring a really terrible trail racing series, and it's just horrible, and I definitely don't like myself. But as I'm running them, though, I keep thinking to myself, I get to do this. There are people who don't have even mm-hmm. this option to even get to do this, and I get to do this. And so that's kind of the mentality I keep living now.
That's a great mentality. I love that. I think that's really, really good.
Yeah.
We are going to switch gears a little bit, if that's okay. There is a new segment that we're trialing this season. So this season, for folks listening and watching, we're going to be ramping things up. We have a ton of incredible, incredible guests that are lined up. Naturally, we had to start with the most incredible.
Absolutely.
But start at the top, others, but it's like, you know, like level 100% and the rest are all like at like 99.9% awesome. So we'll have a lot of great guests. And one of the things that we wanted to start doing for our guests was to introduce a rapid round of what we're calling questions and quibbles.
Yep.
Oh, okay.
And you were lucky enough, Sarah, to be the first one.
Welcome aboard, guinea pig.
Thank you.
I'm kidding. So how do I do it now? All right, we'll switch off.
We're going to go back and forth. Yeah. So you go first and we'll switch off.
You go first. I'll go first.
Oh.
All right. Whatever you want. What is the weirdest thing that you believed as a kid?
Oh, my God. That's a rabbit hole question. Okay. What is the weird? That dinosaurs might still exist down at the bottom of the ocean.
Nice.
Ooh.
That's a good one. I'm so happy we're doing this. Go, Kavi.
Love it. Love it. Very Loch Ness Monster. Okay. Which teacher had the biggest positive impact on you?
Oh my gosh. That's so hard. There's so many. I would have to say his name is Wes. He's a biology professor at NIU.
What is one scientific discovery you wish you could have seen in person?
Okay. Say that again.
What is one scientific discovery you wish you could have seen in person?
I wish I could have been around when the Voyagers passed the outer planets for the first time. Like, I genuinely am so sad that, you know, that's a big first, right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Nice. Okay, if you had to pick one historical scientist to go bowling with, who would it be?
Oh, come on. That's so easy. Carl Sagan. Duh.
Heck yeah.
That is a good one.
Yeah.
If I feel you like were a sandwich. Oh, sorry. Go on. Sorry, I cut you off.
I feel like turtlenecks are the perfect attire to go bowling in.
Oh, yeah.
I think so. I think his outfit already had bowling shoes as part of it, too.
I think
too.
He'd be very good at it.
That was his style.
Yeah.
He was a player.
Sorry, yeah, go on.
If you were a sandwich, what kind of sandwich would you be?
Probably a Reuben.
Ooh. Because
I'm nice. All about that sauerkraut. Yeah.
Nice.
It's a German in me.
All right. What is your most controversial opinion about pizza?
Oh, no. Well, I feel like, I don't know. I don't think I have one. I was going to say like that anchovies do not belong on pizzas at all, but I feel like that's not controversial. I feel like the majority of people would agree with that. Like that's just not right. So I don't really think I have one.
I love that. Yeah. anchovy Twitter or anchovy Instagram do not come for us.
Oh my God. That's it.
I've said my
anchovy mafia is listening right now.
Yeah. If you mess with the anchovy mafia, you'll be sleeping with the fishes.
What is your favorite scientific word or phrase?
Oh, these are really hard, you guys. I guess I'd have to say serpentinization, because that is how the Lost City hydrothermal film is formed. And so I have to explain it day in and day out, but it sounds so fancy when it really just means a chemical reaction between olivine and salt water. But like, it's serpentinization.
Serpentinization. It's when
serpentinization.
You turn a rock into a snake. Is that?
Yeah, no. It's like the crusty byproduct of a chemical reaction.
Cool. Okay. Very cool. Okay.
I like
what that. Is your least favorite scientific word or phrase?
Least favorite. Oh, I don't know. I wouldn't say it's like a phrase, but I generally, just because of the style of science communication and communicator that I am, do not like the word salading of like papers to just, you know what I'm talking about? Like if you read a paper where you're like, that was a whole heck of a lot of word salad when you could have just said, like just for what I just said right now, serpentinization, you know, oh, when the mineral olivine, blah, blah, blah. Like, or you could just say it was a chemical reaction. Like you don't need to zhuzh it up like that just to feel fancy. So I don't really think that's like a word per se, but it really, really annoys me when I read things that I'm like, oh my gosh, like just say the thing, say it. You don't need to mental gymnastics this.
What is your favorite useless science fact?
I don't think there's any useless science fact, though. I feel like they're all important. But one of the ones that I think a useful thing that I got so excited about, and again, we didn't really talk much about this, but for context, this is why I mentioned the dinosaurs at the bottom of the ocean. I was raised young Earth creationist, so I had no knowledge of evolutionary biology until I got older in life. And when I read that, like, whales still have leftover parts of their hip bones inside them because of their evolution from water to land and then back to water, I was like, what? That's amazing. It's useless though, I guess, in a sense, because who really cares? Like, okay, yay.
I care.
That's cool. Awesome.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
Like the fact that you have water mammals that as you said, they evolved from water to land and back to water, they still
have the even leftovers. Though
the gait. They have the gait in the way they swim as if they were, mind blowing. Love it.
So cool.
Love it. Okay. If you could rename one planet in our solar system, what would you call it?
Oh, man. The first thing that popped into my head was Neptune. I feel like it's such a blah planet and kind of a cool name. And maybe we should give it a more blah name because like poor Uranus also is pretty blah. And it gets a lot of bad rap. I don't know. Maybe Neptune, but I don't know what I would name it. These are really hard questions, but it is such a blah planet, right?
Blah planet. That's
it's
it.
Cool name,
yeah.
Though.
Blah.
Kind of wasted on it.
I'm trying to think, like, the objects that orbit further out than Neptune are called trans-Neptunian objects. So these would be, like, just trans-blah objects. Like,
trans-blah. What? Just blah. Name them all blah. I think that kind of works, actually.
They cross the blah threshold.
Blah, blah, blah. It goes Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus, blah, blah, blah.
Kids are like, can't we go to, like, Neptune? And I'm like, you guys, it's really boring. Like, the projectors makes it bad, too. So you're just like, well, there's a hazy blue blah. Cool. All right, let's move on, right? You know what I need to see here.
All right, last one.
All right.
If you had to sing one karaoke song and really hit it hard to save humanity from an alien invasion, what would it be?
Oh, I got to you. Because I did this at a conference.
Did you save humanity from an alien
invasion? Man, her life is getting cooler by the second. The boats, the planetariums, the PhD, rock and karaoke.
Oh, I do this so good, though. Seriously, everyone the next day was like, holy crap, you were amazing. I might have had a few drinks with me. So the song is a cover of Mr. Grinch, How the Grinch Stole Christmas, Mr. Grinch, by a singer called Jordan Smith. But it's very jazzy. It's I know you're looking. Trust me, I would say.
I'm picturing like Jim Carrey's Grinch doing jazz hands.
Yeah, but it's like it's. Do you know Michael Bublé's Feeling Good?
Yes.
Right.
Love
like,
it.
Yeah.
Feel like that vibe. It's that vibe, but for Mr. Grinch. So like you.
Okay. Cool. That,
Mr. Grinch.
That would probably be my song that I would go with.
Yeah.
The Bublé song. So yeah, same vibe. I like
it. It's the same vibe. I said, Jordan Smith, you're a mean one, Mr. Grinch. You'll be like, oh, Oh, it's a really great cover. And it's
okay.
Yep. Easy.
I love it.
Look that one up now. And I have a feeling that Benjamin's going to put some sort of Grinch related reference in the opening.
I get so much flack for this now, but like, I will own it. I'm serious. It is the best karaoke song I have.
Love it. I will have to hear that in person one day.
Come to the planetarium conferences where we have karaoke. Woo!
Amazing. Well, you have made it through the gauntlet of our 11 questions and quibbles.
I love it.
You did well. It was good. And you have made it through this episode. This has been so much fun for me. And just catching up and getting the band back together.
This has been super exciting. I'm so glad you guys have kept going on with this too, because, you know, we had a, you know, sometimes I miss it. Sometimes I'm also like, whew, there was a lot of grind in producing this content week after week after week, right? You know, like there's a lot of responsibility in just producing. So I'm proud that you guys have continued and that I brought you two together and now you continue on.
Yeah, following in your brave footsteps, and you are absolutely always welcome back as a guest whenever you want.
Yeah.
Well, if some of these things shake out, I will gladly come back and tell you the exciting tales of what is in store for the next year, because each option is quite possibly as legendary as the next. So I don't know which one's going to work out.
If you're going to tell us secretly that you're going to go to space or something, I'm going to be pissed.
No, not yet. Not yet. Not yet.
All right.
You're pretty big. So.
All right. So,
all right.
Where can people find you on the interwebs if they're interested in following on your incredible story and adventures?
I am available, as I always say this because of you, Kavi, now on all the time wasters as Space Case Sarah, all of them, including the once dead and resurrected TikTok. And I'm spacekcsarah.com. I'm on all of them as Space Case Sarah. So you just look up Space Case Sarah and you'll find me literally everywhere. It's probably actually almost concerning how visible I am on the internet now, but
everywhere I look, I see her face.
It's not hard to find me nowadays, but yep, spacekcsarah.com. Even if you want to find me on my own like Facebook account, Sarah Treadwell, I'm pretty open to accepting any friends there as well. So
cool.
Yeah.
Awesome.
How about Benjamin, you, Kyle? Where are you?
Oh, me?
Yeah,
I'm in Sydney.
Oh, okay. That's about it for a copy.
Yeah. Okay. Sydney. you can find me on the interwebs at Fun Fact Science, on all the good platforms and also the bad ones. Trying to minimize how much time I spend on social media these days, and instead spend my time with wonderful folks like yourselves. Benjamin, where can our listeners and viewers find you?
Don't search up my name directly like you would for Sarah, because there's a lot of people in France with the same name and spelling as me. So that's not me. You can find me as Science Actually on Facebook is the big one, but we're also on Instagram, Twitter, Blue Sky, Hive, TikTok, YouTube, et cetera.
All of us.
You can hear the episodes on all of your favorite podcasting apps. And as Benjamin mentioned, you can check us out and see our pretty faces on the YouTube and on the Clock app, if the Clock app is available in your country. We've been putting up YouTube shorts of our ad segments, so you can check those out and also look forward this year to seeing some ad segments featuring some of our new sponsors that are will be revealed later.
See, Sarah, you're not the only one with a few tricks up their sleeve. Thank you.
yes, this has been incredible. Thank you again, Sarah, for coming. Thank you, Benjamin, for being your fine self as always.
And I am.
And we'll see y'all next time on the Science Actually Presents The Nerd and the Scientist.
You're a maniac, Mr. Grinch. You really are a heel. You're as kindly as a cactus. You're as charming as an eel, Mr. Grinch. You're a bad banana with a greasy black peel. Just face the music, you're a monster, Mr. Grinch. Your heart's an empty hole. Your brain is full of spiders. You've got garlic in your soul, Mr. Grinch. I wouldn't touch you with a 39 and a half foot pole. Socks, your soul is full of gunk, Mr. Grinch. Ooh, yeah, yeah. You're a vile one, Mr. Grinch. You have termites in your smile. You have all the tender sweetness of a seasick crocodile, Mr. Grinch. Given the choice between you, I'd take the seasick crocodile. The three words that best describe you are as follows, and I quote, stink!